Demon Seed.
Walker, you must be mistaken.
It's now, it's here.
Come on down here and help with it.
Demon Seed.
Paranormal existence.
You mean to say you came here purposely?
The first move in the great conspiracy had been made.
Well, why can't Poolboy set us up with the one that works with the video and everything?
I'll tell you why Poolboy's fucked it up now.
What's
mate.
He fucking up for now, like? You know what I mean?
He spent all his money.
He didn't do fuck all, mind.
He does fuck all, right? He spent all his money, all our money, mind, off the fucking podcast and
That's
all that.
That's why hard working labour's paying for that, mind.
Exactly. He sent a photograph.
He's building a fucking pool now. Be fucked another one, like. You know what I mean?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He's got all that money in Canada with his fucking rich house and his fucking smoking fags.
Fucking love the yard. Here we go.
Ring it, Mike. Ring it, Mike. Hit the metal.
I got a metal. It's on the floor. I dropped it.
Michael, get it out now. Whee! Michael, I love it when you smash the metal. It's marvellous, and I'm feeling really excited to be doing it today.
I got to say, mate, John, if the listeners get out, buy a fucking smash the metal t-shirt, mate, they are fucking epic. Like, I go on it. It looks really nice. Like, it's much better than this shit old podcast we do, isn't it?
I tell you what, a lot of them young lads are wearing it on the street now. Mike, I've seen young boys wearing it up a fucking Tremorph. I've trimmed off it now with a skateboard.
Hey, guess where I went the other day, mine, with my wife.
Oh, Mike.
I drove right past Cabalford Interchange, didn't
I? Oh, Mike, I tell you what, has it changed much since last time, or is it the same?
It's exactly the same.
Oh, I tell you, great memories of that place as a young lad, mind you.
What a planning. What an idea that was.
The Cabalford.
Let's get several A roads, cross them over, and in the intersection, we'll make a series of subways we can walk into. You can have a lovely, you can eat your sandwich in peace.
Brilliant.
Cars thunder past you and over you in three directions.
Fucking class in a glass. You can have a piss there as well. Anything you need.
Oh, do it all there. It's a one-stop shop.
Fucking great. And it's nice to know, you know, there are people outside of Wales who will never see the Cabalfa interchange, you know. But we just give that little bit of magic to them. You know, sprinkle it across their eardrums. And they can think of that, you know, so... Oh, Danny boy, the pipes.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. Something, something, and doodle, doodle, doo. Something, da dee da 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 da
da da da da da da da. I get up at Cabalfour now in my fucking chair, right? I get it. I charge the batteries the night before, right? 4.5 hours to get up there. I take a...
Here he is, look. Here he is, Roger Whittaker coming over here now, look.
Oh,
Roger Whittaker on a power chair.
Oh, fucking hell, boys. I tell you what.
Leash as fuck. Roger Whittaker.
some people.
I'm going to leave old Durham town. I'm going to leave old Durham town. I'm going to leave old Durham town and the leaving's going to get me down.
What a horrible experience this is for everybody involved.
Fuck him anyway.
It's fucking horrible. And it just goes on and it just goes on and on and on and it never stops. It's like a bloody school-based exam.
It's school. Wonderful. Best days of your life, of course, John.
Oh, best days ever, of course.
Best days of your life, school days.
You look back on those days, marvellous, you know.
I often miss the days when I was regularly picked up by my tie, spanked, punched.
Anybody called Ian had their head flushed down the toilet. Anyone called Richard had a pen shoved up their bottom, and they were all taught a bloody lesson, including me. Imagine being called John. I got my ass whipped on the
bed. Of course, with the head teacher lessons, let's not forget that. Headmaster.
Of course.
Headmaster of your own school.
Michael.
Just a dream, sir.
Remembering... Mary the punk.
Those scabs.
When I was in school, in about the second year, a headmaster fell. I hadn't been there long, so I didn't really know who he was. But he was called Mr. Witherington. They took him out of the school and they got one of the women in to run it instead. And after about 8 months, he died. They didn't really know who to replace him with, so for ages, we didn't have a headmaster about a year and a half. And
school just lost control of itself, and at one point I was leaving geography on a Wednesday afternoon. We had Geography Jones, who I hated because he was only obsessed with fucking rugby, and he had hair growing out the front of his nose, not the nose, not the nostrils, but the front of his fucking nose, and he hated anyone if they didn't do the rugby, and I didn't do rugby.
You didn't do it. You were no good at it.
He used to say, "Where's your homework?" And you say, "I haven't done it, sir." And then he'd just berate you for 15 minutes, and then you'd have to go home. And we hated him so much. We hated him so much. So he used to say, "The bell's for me, not for you." And he'd make you sit there, and as soon as the fucking bell went, he'd run out of the fucking room and leave you there with your books open and your pens, and it was time for the fucking bus. We hated him so much. Me and my mate Titan.
Sounds good to me.
We sat at the back of the classroom and we thought, fuck this, I'm going to wait till everyone's gone. And when everyone had left the room, we picked up the chairs.
This is a real-time story, but
we threw them across the room and shouted, "Fuck you, Geography Jones, fuck you." And we threw the chairs across the room at the blackboard, hoping to God we'd break it and he'd never teach us again. And as we did it, one of the cleaning ladies came in, and I forget, she smelled strongly of cigarette smoke. One of the chairs nearly hit her, and she said, "I'll have you up for this. I'm going to tell Mr. Witherington." And as I picked up my bag, I looked her in the eye and said, "You'll have a job, love. He's been dead for 18 months," and walked down the hall laughing to myself.
Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, what a great episode it is working out to be so far. Have you got any examples of throwing things at people in secondary school, Mike?
Yeah, I taught a kid, actually, who I was on the phone to the back. Micro memories.
Micro memories.
Shoes on the other foot. I was doing the teaching. Young lad, I won't say his name. I was on the bank trying to sort out an overdraft because I was in financial dire straits. Only had a little bit of free time at lunchtimes. No mobile phones. I was on the office phone. He'd snuck into the sports hall in my lunch and kept flicking the lights on and off. I went, "No way, you're annoying me." And I was getting stressed and more stressed. And then I finally get through to the bank after being stuck in a voicemail for ages. And he started banging on the door. I said, "Fuck off now, you're getting on my nerves." And then I was just getting to the point with the bank manager when he's going to offer to extend my overdraft so I could pay my fucking rent and eat food. And the little prick threw a chair in my office. And I said to the bank manager, "Hang on a minute." And I ran out of the room, chased the little prick down the stairs into the changing rooms, grabbed him, pinned him up on the wall by his fucking neck and said, "You're fucking with the wrong person, mate." I kicked open the fire exit and chucked him down the bank at the back of the school. Then I just tried and compose myself, go back and finish the conversation with the bank manager. The upshot is, I got the overdraft and I could pay my rent. And last lesson, we had a year 11 lesson and he was in that class. And he said, "I'm taking you to fucking court, mate." I said, "What for?" He said, "Assault. You beat me up." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "In lunchtime." I said, "You must be mistaken. The sports hall is locked at lunchtime. You couldn't have got in." And I looked at him and gave him a little look that said, "I know you were in there, mate, and you snuck in. And you know that you nearly shit your pants when they pinned you up against the wall, so fuck off." Great days. The school's shut now. I don't know what he's doing. I imagine a life of crime.
Great combination of hard-edged TV cop and no-nonsense teacher combined into one ball of fun. Mike Bubbins.
He's a secondary school teacher in the South Wales Valleys, and he ain't
forget about
shit.
It. The guy was nails.
Hey, Duchovny, you done that homework yet? You dumb son of a bitch. Do, motherfucker. Everybody knows the fucking gym room's locked at break time, Duchovsky. Everybody knows, you piece of shit. I got something on you, you dickweed, drawing penises in the back of your book. You think you got something on me? I'll fuck you in the ass with a snooker cue and give you double attention, you piece of shit. Boop, boop, boop.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful, of course. Wonderful raconteur, of course.
And
one tends to brush over the teaching profession, John.
Very much
boil it down into constituent parts, of course. It's so much more than that, John. The sum of the parts is always infused to the whole, if you will, John. I see the teacher, John. The teacher. Not only to instruct one, the youngster, in the three R's, if you will, you know, the reading, writing, arithmetic, of course. The teacher is much larger than that job. It's to prepare the youngster for life in the real world. And, of course, in the real world, if you throw chairs into offices and flick out lights on and off and bang on doors and call people a cunt, they won't give you detention, John. They'll pin you up by the neck on the wall and throw you out of a fire exit down a bank.
Of course.
And that's something that I think that particular youngster learned that evening, afternoon, I should say. And I think that's probably stayed with him, John. I think he probably thanks me to this day.
I agree with you. I mean, I think there's nothing better than discipline. For
young discipline, people. Of course.
Yeah. It's very important. I mean, you look at Mark.
Mark Fowler, of course.
Arthur Fowler. Mary the Punk. Mary the Punk. Little Willie.
Dr. Leg.
It's the same.
In the same order.
It's the same, and they come back. They come back in droves.
I got no sympathy for them.
No,
zero.
There's nothing there. I clearly remember as a young boy attending school, and there was a rather large chap, same age as me. I mean, 12, 13 years old.
12, 13 years.
Went by the name of Mark Riddler, a.k.a. Charlie. I don't know why he was called Charlie.
Yes, strange name for a Riddler.
Of course, but no one would ever confront Charlie, and he held several very mysterious secrets, very much an enigma of a man. I mean, at the age of 12, he was about 8 foot tall, had a full beard, had a mullet with the sides shaved, wore ripped trousers.
Insisted on sharing with the other boys, insisted he was 12.
And this lad wouldn't take no for an answer. He would not take no for an answer. Would not take any shit from anybody. I remember on one occasion, I believe a cat had come into the assembly hall.
Oh, yes.
And I think Mr. Yates was...
Yatesy.
Herding the cat out of the school. And of course, in walks Mark Riddler, aka Charlie.
Bold as brass, I'd imagine.
Bold as brass. Didn't give a damn about the opening hymn or any of the announcements that were being made by the headmaster. Walked in, and of course, he had a full beard. I mean, for a 13-year-old lad, this was full Santa Claus mode.
Yes.
And the teacher turned up to him and said, I think you need to shave that off. He said, fuck you. What are you going to do about it? Towered above him, scared the man shitless, and carried on to wear the beard for another 2 years. Wonderful man. Yes. Absolutely wonderful chap.
Of course, now a head teacher in his own right. So
naturally. And on one occasion, I remember he'd ventured onto a train track. And he'd managed to obtain himself a blasting cap used by the rail workers to warn them on the coming train.
Perfectly safe, of course.
Well, perfectly safe. And of course, you know, to demonstrate that he'd attained this of his own natural accord, he walked into the play yard around the back of Games Block, which, if my memory serves me correctly, had in massive 4-foot letters the words Heavy Metal Rules painted on the wall.
Yes, well,
and I'll never forget, he placed it in the middle of the yard just before the school began, so around about 9 o'clock.
Yes,
and he got himself a breeze block. And he stood there repeatedly throwing the breeze block on top of the blasting cap for about 10 minutes. And we all stood around watching, thinking, my God, the man's going to kill himself.
Yeah.
And eventually, just as the bell went off, he hit the detonator spot on. The whole bloody thing blew up. It blew his fucking trousers apart. His legs were covered in blood. But he carried on with the school day as normal. And that really is the school spirit of St. Joseph's RCE Comrades.
Riddler.
Wonderful.
To the Riddler.
Wonderful man. Yes. Wonderful man. And a great friend. And a bon vivant.
I remember once talking to, of course, Harold Lloyd about explosions in the Clipper playground. And Harold Lloyd looked at me through those hilarious glasses.
Of course.
And said to me, was Harold Lloyd for never play with explosives in the playground, John.
Oh, naturally, of course you don't. You just don't, do you? You know, it's bloody ridiculous, the idea of young people playing with fire. But I must say,
oh, yeah, look, John.
As a young boy,
micro memories.
Oh yes, I like these, John. I like your micro memories, John. They're always young Fife Robertson here on BBC Two. Now over to John Rutledge, who's got some micro memories. John,
at the top of my road, where I grew up as a kid, there used to be a house at the end of the road, and an old man, used to live in it. We never saw his face.
Right, you are, John.
And he had these big conker trees in his garden. They've gone now. The house was turned into flats for beds.
Horse chestnuts for the listeners.
Surrounded by horse chestnuts, and every conker season, the old man used to go out into his garden, and he used to collect horse chestnuts, and then he would put them in plastic bags and leave them outside the front.
Why was that exactly, John? Was he a pervert, or was he just a helpful old man?
He was a helpful old man who thought he would give us some simple pleasures by leaving some conkers outside for us, and we would go and collect them, and we never saw his face. But every winter for a good few years, we collect the conkers until eventually the man died. There was nothing left. There were no conkers left for us to collect anymore. And one summer's afternoon, my mate Titan came down. Titan's not his real name, it's a nickname. It's too long a story to go into. But Titan came round and I said, "See that house there? Old man, he used to live in there, and he used to collect the conkers from the horse chestnut tree."
Yes.
Then he put them in a bag for us to play conkers with.
Oh, do tell, John. Well, I cannot wait for the denouement of this particular story, John.
Well, Mike, I said he's dead now. Should we go and have a look in his house, see what we can find? He said, yeah.
Oh, you broke into a dead man's house. That's.
We tried to, but we couldn't get in through any of the doors, so we looked at some of the small outhouses around the back.
Surely Johnny could have smashed a small window and got through that way.
I wasn't that rebellious. I was a bit scared of getting caught because it was only the end of my road. I was pretending to be harder than it was. And anyway, we found this small shed, so we opened it. We found a paddling pool inside. And it confused me because he was about 98. I don't know where he had a paddling pool. But anyway, shortly after that, we went into the corner of his garden and we found a giant dog shit. So we got a box of matches, stuck all the matches the length of it, and then lit them.
Wonderful story, John.
The stench was outrageous, and then we left, and I've never been back since.
So just to clarify, John, a man died. I think the horse chestnuts, John, something of a red herring in this particular story. An old man on your street died.
Yeah.
You went to his house, couldn't get in, and a dog had shit in the corner of his garden. You set fire to the shit and it stunk. Is that right, John? That's a wonderful story, that, John. It's certainly something to tell the grandchildren sitting around the campfire there, John.
Thanks, Mike.
One of those are wonderful. So almost in three parts of that story. A classical storyteller there, John.
If it was a piece of art, it would be called a triptych.
Quite right, John. Quite right. Each panel is equally resplendent as the last. I mean, that was the thing. I mean,
something you can put up in your front room. Why not try?
When is your balanced storyteller, Rutledge? Often his triptych stories, if you want, the balance is phenomenal. Because there's no real beginning to speak of, and the less said about the middle, the better, and almost no end. It really is a master of storytelling.
An anecdote. You fucking funny fart.
He tells some fucking sunny stories, mind, didn't he? You remember that time we told a story about a fucking dog shit and it was all smelly and all that?
Oh, it's
fucking funny as fucking
was, isn't it? Oh, Melon, I never heard someone
tell him. Him.
He never told a story like anybody like him. He's fucking crazy. We go in there every...
Tell him about it. Tell him about the time when the old man died and there was a fucking dog shitting in the corner of the garden. Like, strap in when have a listen to Kim tell us.
Oh, Mel, you got to hear him, Mel. And it was fucking hilarious. We'd just been in fucking Newport Town Centre for the Greggs. And we went up Bailey's afterwards, and John the Lock was in there, and we was having a drink, and then he said, "Do you want to hear a story?" I said,
"Tell him, Kim, what happened then, didn't
he?" You won't believe it. He came up to me, he said, "You look like you need a good anecdote or three." I said, "I'll tell you what, if it was a form of art, I'd have a triptych." He said, "I fucking go on."
In depth, mind, didn't he?
Yeah, in depth. He was like Tolstoy when it came to stories.
He fucking loves surrealism. That's the thing about him. Like, you see him, he'd be drinking fucking cider and spoons like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and all that. He loved the fucking surrealist movement, didn't he?
He fucking couldn't get enough of it.
He would always say, paint what you feel or what you can actually see. Like, exactly. You know what I mean?
He said he always aspired to be like a 7-year-old when it came to creating art. I'll tell you what, when it came to being on the piss, he was fucking right up there. Fucking stained all stained all over the front of him. He fucking stank a piss for weeks, but he was a fucking laugh. And he had stories, Melon. I'm fucking telling you, Melon. One time he fucking come. One time he come in, he said he was fucking walking home from fucking babies. 3 a.m. in the morning, he seen a fucking dog. One of the fucking Yorkshire Terriers with a bow in his head. So he picks it up and took it home. And he knocked his head out of fucking limp. So he felt some sorrow for this. So he took it home. He got some fucking pedigree chum, Mike, of all the fucking dog foods available. You won't believe it.
Could have had fucking Mr. C there, couldn't he? Could have had Borneo.
Yeah, he could have had it all. And he fucking nurtured it. He could have given it pal away if he got the fucking pedigree chum. He nurtured this for 3 days and he noticed it wasn't getting any better, so he thought I'd better go to the fucking vet. Anyway, he walks in at the appointment for the vet. He takes me and he says, I found this fucking Yorkshire Terrier, Melon. You won't believe it. Melon, you won't believe it. He fucking takes it to the vet. The vet says, that's not Yorkshire Terrier. It's a mutant rat, you fucking prick. He only picked it out the fucking sewer, and he still got it to this day in his own with a cage of fucking Melon. Melon, he's a fucking laugh.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here tonight, Mike, and it's great to be speaking to you. Expert stuntman, professional skydiver, deep sea diver. You've been in the industry for over 35 years. What is it, Mike?
37 years now, John.
37 years. What is it that drove you to become a stuntman in the first place, Mike?
Well, John, it's a sense of adventure. When one was a youngster, when I grew up, there was the work would seem a great place, Jonathan.
Indeed.
And one would work hard, and one's parents would work hard, and one seemed to work all the hours of godsend.
Yeah.
And then one would go to bed, of course, maybe listen to the wireless for an hour or two, and in the morning one would have a meagre breakfast. And, of course, back to work, John. And life seemed like almost as if a treadmill, John. Right? Mm-hmm. One felt like a rodent on a treadwheel sometimes, one seemed to work merely to live. Rather than live to work, or the other way around, or get the two of those things confused.
Of course.
I remember thinking to myself, John, I was in a lesson once in school, and the master was there, and there was a small hamster in a cage, rolling round and round and round and round, a hamster wheel. And I thought to myself, that is the perfect analogy for our lives, John.
Very much so.
And I will be damned, John. Damned, I tell you. If I live a life on a hamster wheel. And I remember going to see my careers master, and I said to him, I said to Mr. Timkins, I said, I have no desire whatsoever to spend my life merely living hand to mouth on a master's hamster wheel. I intend to make a name for myself and make myself my own fortune.
Of course.
And he looked at me and he said to me, I remember he'd been an actor himself back in the day before he became a drama teacher. Yeah. And he said to me, oh, which of course was Tarzan.
Naturally.
You must follow your desires. Follow your way your heart leads you. And of course, Mr. Weissmuller, his name was, changed his name to Timkins, who came to your school for. He was Mr. Timkins Weissmuller. Said, that I should follow my dreams, of course. And as lucky I would have it, through his contacts in the film industry before I became a career teacher at the school, he set me up with a wonderful chap named Harold Lloyd, of course. Harold Lloyd had been a huge, huge star in the 1920s and 30s, renowned for doing his own stunts. And I wanted the adventure job. So he arranged a meeting for myself and Harold Lloyd. And I remember I went to Harold Lloyd's house, wonderful black and white house, of course, completely black and white. Walked in, and Mr. Lloyd was completely black and white as well. I remember these hilarious glasses on, John.
Yes.
And he bade me sit down with his hand. He put it towards a chair. Then I sat down, and I told him that I wanted to become a self-made man. I wanted to break off this hamster wheel. I wanted to pursue my dreams that Mr. Timkins Weissmuller had said to me. Had said to me, which meant that one should pursue one's dream in Tarzan. Yeah. And Mr. Lloyd looked at me, and I'll never forget these words as long as I live, John. He looked me square in the eyes through those hilarious glasses and said to me,
naturally.
And of course that meant, in Harold Lloyd, you must pursue your dreams. Yes. Mr. Timkins Weissmuller could not be more right in this particular part. And I remember he set me up with a friend of his in Hollywood. I took the next steamer from Liverpool to New York and took the train, a wonderful train journey of almost 4 days, of course, across the United States, got to Los Angeles. And I became, within hours of arriving, the greatest stuntman Hollywood's ever seen.
And is this, I mean, at the age of nine, it's fantastic you did this, but your first stunt itself left you horribly disfigured. It could have ended your entire career, losing both balls, having your nipples ripped off, your ass completely ripped away.
Yes.
But you proceeded on. Tell me, what exactly happened? It's been conjectured over the years about what happened with the stunt, but I mean, to lose both balls, the ass cheek and one of the nipples. Must have been horrific for a nine-year-old.
I was, of course, I was the stunt double for a chap called Errol Flynn. Errol Flynn, he was in a film called, I believe, called Robin Hood. Yeah. And the particular film, in this particular part of the Robin Hood film with Errol Flynn was in a duel with the evil Sheriff of Nottingham, of course.
Right.
Each had a sword, but the Sheriff of Nottingham had a small man trap. Which of course is almost as if an iron what's the word called, John?
A clamp
is the word, John. I was trying to think of the Venus flytrap, of course. Imagine an iron Venus flytrap, if you will.
A sprung iron trap.
With jaws, yes, vicious jaws. And of course, I was wearing the green tights and the small peaked hat with the feather on. I was considerably shorter than Flynn at the time because I was 9 years of age when Flynn at the time was, I believe, 27.
Yeah.
But they were filmed it very cleverly. I would be standing either on a small box or the Sheriff of Nottingham would be in a small trench. Had a duel. And, of course, in this particular part, the Sheriff of Nottingham was stood in the trench. And as I lunged forward with my sword, the Sheriff was to parry the sword at this point. He parried the sword. I tipped over, John. And I fell balls first into the Sheriff of Nottingham's man trap.
Oh.
Whereupon the iron jaws clamped around my testes, cutting off both my testicles simultaneously. And but, John, you want to remember, this was before the war, John. We had very little. I'd been given a golden opportunity to become the greatest stuntman the world has ever seen. And I would be damned, John, damned,
of course,
if I was going to throw that away and do my first movie. So I remember that I believe Cecil B. DeMille was directing. And he called cut. And I looked at him and I said to him, Mr. DeMille, I was never over familiar. I can go on. Mm-hmm. And they sent a couple of I believe it was the gaffer and the best boy.
Yeah.
Came over and they opened the jaws and removed my testicles. They were no use to man nor beast at this point.
Of course.
Fed them to one of the horses.
Mm.
And I finished the rest of the scene. Well. And Errol Flynn himself was so enamored of my performance that he insisted that I double for all of him, all of his film work. And of course, you want to have a wonderfully successful career, John. So I doubled for Errol Flynn. I doubled for Spencer Tracy. I doubled, I believe, in what's the chap's name? Douglas Fairbank, of course.
Of course, naturally.
And as I started my career so young, John, just 9 years of age, I was still doubling well into the 1970s, of course. I doubled for Burt Reynolds, of course. I doubled for Benny Hill, Dick Emery. And just I've had the most wonderful, wonderful career, John. I've never once looked back. And do you know what, John? I have never been a hamster. I've had good times, I've had bad times, John. They've been my times, John.
I think.
And I never go back to the school. If I may just finish my answer, John.
Of course.
And Mr. Timkins Weissmuller at this point had retired, of course. And I remember going to tell him about the wonderful times, the adventures I'd had. And it was all thanks to him.
Naturally. And it's...
Just if I may, John.
Of course, naturally.
He looked at me and he had a tear in his eye, John. He had a tear in his eye. And I remember he got a small handkerchief from his loincloth and just dabbed his eye, looked at me, put one of those wonderful muscular arms on my shoulders and just said to me, "Oh!"
And it's and that...
this, John, this was the genius of Weissmuller.
I think that's what's wonderful is you've met so many of these wonderful... You had a well-known love with Lillian. Well, yeah, well, these people, you know, for an incredibly long time, you were at the height of your fame. You were in Hollywood. You were living the high life. Although you'd had both balls, your anal cheeks, and, of course, one of your nipples ripped off at the age of 9, you managed to make it all the way through. And even with, obviously, World War II kicking in the middle, 1939 put a brief end to your career. You ended up, if I'm correct, joining the U.S. Marine Corps and fighting in, well, Pearl Harbor. Something that changed your life dramatically. I mean, after having both balls, the anal cheeks and a nipple ripped off, then in Pearl Harbor, you obviously fought incredibly bravely, but you did lose both eyes, one arm, eight of your toes, and most of the skin from your body, yet you proceeded to come back and make one of the biggest Hollywood smashes of all time, Dick Durkin in The Men and Boys, which is a fantastic film.
The thing about John, on that fateful day, of course, in 1941, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, I was still barely 11 years of age at the time.
You were very young.
And, you know, I thought I could have quite easily come back to Blighty with my British citizenship. Mm-hmm. But I thought I owe this country, John. I owe this country for giving me a wonderful opportunity. And as you say, I joined the United States Marine Corps. Was immediately sent out to Pearl Harbor, of course, in Hawaii. And yes, was very, very badly injured. But didn't miss a trick, John. I really didn't miss a trick. I was offered, because of my celebrity, of course, I was offered to perform in various troops, entertaining the armed forces.
Yeah.
But I thought my job was on the battlefield, John.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. You know, and of course, yes, by the end of the war, I ended up fighting in the Pacific Theater of War, mostly because with my Marine commitments, I had lost both my testicles, of course, my one arm, eight of my toes, both arse cheeks, my eyes.
All of your skin.
The vast majority of my skin. And of course, at Iwo Jima, I lost both my ears and my nose and was rendered in a wheelchair, of course.
Yeah, of course.
That didn't stop me, John.
I mean, naturally. I mean, that's it. I mean, technically, anybody else would have been cast off, written off as an amorphous blob of a man. But to come back to Hollywood with, you know, supreme confidence and to sign up for Dick Durpin in The Bell and Boys.
Well, fortunately for me, John, by the time Dick Durpin and The Bell and Boys were around, of course, I was a 16-year-old young man. I'd been fairly badly injured. I'd had my fair share of knocks.
Well, arse cheeks removed, both balls, eight of your toes, both arms, your ears, your eyes, most of your skin, an amorphous blob of a man.
But by luck, John, by a sheer dint of luck, my amazing penis was unscathed. And of course, I was to play the stunt penis throughout the film.
Of course.
This would have been the days before censorship. I remember, I believe I was doubling for, what was the chap's name? Oh, who was the chap I doubled for?
Cary Grant was that?
It was David Niven, actually, John.
David Niven.
I believe a young David Niven I was doubling for. He just finished the war himself, of course. Yeah, I think he's now RAF in the war. And he was astounded, John. Of course, him and Errol Flynn were good friends. And he'd heard of my name from Flynn. And so when the film came up of the name, I can't remember the name you said.
Dick Durkin in the Bell and Boys.
Yes. And of course, Dick Durkin was this fantastically well-endowed circus performer.
Yeah, of course. So famous now throughout the world, of course.
Yes. And luckily for me, performed in a wheelchair. So I ticked all the boxes, essentially. I was in a wheelchair. I had a fantastic penis on me.
No toe testicles, no arse cheeks.
I mean, not needed, John, because it was very close. It was filmed in very close up all the time, very avant-garde, if you will. A lot of handheld camera.
Yeah,
and that was it. I mean, it was an absolute smash. I mean, my penis won Best Supporting Actor in the 1946 Academy Award.
Yeah,
and never looked back, John. Never looked back.
And that penis really went from strength to strength.
Oh, caps. Takes the leg.
Superlot. We're starting together. Superlot pop video about the BBC documentary about a young couple who got married following
together.
The first years of life.
Oh my. Standing together.
I can't breathe.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, Dick Turpin, you know, you move throughout cinema using primarily your penis as your main tool of acting. I mean, the
yes,
four and a half foot tall. You know, to sell it to a pair of googly eyes on, working with people like Hitchcock, for example. As a viewer now, you could not tell that that was a severely burned man with no limbs, no testes, no arse, cheeks, no skin. It simply looks as masterful as anyone else who to grace the silver screen. I mean, no, sort of modern comparison. It was the Al Pacino of penises. You know, it really.
Even kind of. I remember once that Pacino said to me, we were working together on a moving film, and he said to me, "We're starting together. We're taking a chance on what we feel. We're starting together because we believe our love is real. We'll promise to have and to hold from this day until we frail and old. There's no chance of breaking the vows that we're making. We're starting together and suddenly everything is new. We're starting together, not thinking of one anymore, but two. We have both had so much that we can learn, trust and respect we've got to earn. We can only get better. We're starting together. It seems only yesterday we met and fell in love. Who'd have believed we'd have come this far? The future's a mystery. We're bound to make some mistakes. Oh, but we'll get through the heartaches. So here we are, starting together. You're learning to live with all my faults. We're starting together, and what's yours is mine, and what's mine is yours. And when the years have slipped away, maybe you'll turn to me and say that we're so clever in starting together. The future's a mystery. We're bound to make some mistakes, but oh, but we'll get through the heartaches. So here we are, starting together. You're learning to live with all my faults. We're starting together. What's yours is mine. What's mine is yours. Starting together. Starting together. Starting together. Starting together. Starting together.
I know the words of Sue Pollard there, interpreted through Al Pacino, read through yourself, Mike. It's moving.
I can't have the art. Here we go. I can't find it.
Table. It's hitting something. It's just become hitting. Hey, I tell you what,
starting
we can...
together.
Oh,
suddenly everything is new.
Oh,
we're starting together.
Oh, so Paula, now
not thinking of one anymore, but two.
Do. Oh, so Paula, do. Take your pants off. Oh, look at that mucky gusset. Do.
Oh, God.
I tell you what is always good when we need to fill a bit of time up, just asking listeners what have they've done.
Break it up.
What do they?
Good.
Yeah, and they can. So if you're a listener, do you follow us on Twitter? If not, at Demon Seed Pod. Have you ever heard of Al Pacino?
That's
a good one.
Yeah, hell of a guy.
Yeah, Al Pacino.
Yeah, Al Pacino, huh? Yeah. Think of a bit of a smart guy, huh? Yeah, Al Pacino, see? Why, I know somebody who can hook you up with him in the 5 minutes, see? Just give me your number. I can take you around, show you Al Pacino's sweaty gusset for $22, kid. Do.
Just like a wop to bring a knife to a gunfight.
Sean Connery. I'm Sean Connery. Take your pants off. Let me see your gusset.
My name is Ramirez.
Ramirez, let your head down.
Never overextend, Hollander. You overextend, you lose your head. You lose your head, you lose the battle.
Milk, lemonade. Turn around and chocolate's made.
We're starting together. Learn to live with all our faults.
Ding dong, your dick's this long.
Mamma mia, I've got diarrhea.
Jesus Christ Superstar turns around the corner on a Yamaha,
pulls a skid, kills a kid, wrecked his bollocks on a dustbin lid.
My name's Coco. I'm a monkey like you. I live in the jungle, not in the zoo. I keep my condoms in a little pink box, but I'd rather have a shag with Samantha Fox.
Oh, God.
You could have a laugh, haven't you? You know,
so. What's the alternative?
Exactly. You know, what sort of country are we living in where you can't have a laugh, you know? I mean, that's at least your worries these days if you can't have a laugh, you know? That's what I say.
Yeah, I say the same thing.
I've always said that.
Right.
Here's a good one. Have you ever seen a person with tiny hands smaller than their body? Ever seen a person with tiny hands smaller than the rest of their body? That's a good one. Jeremy Beadle had one, but have you ever seen someone with two?
No.
What's that chap who does Noel's house party? Noel
Edmonds.
Two tiny hands, but a tiny body that's in scale.
Yeah. Met Noel Edmonds a couple of times.
Nice lad?
Yeah, nice enough fella. I did the audience warm-up for a Deal or No Deal.
Did you like...
22 strangers travel from all over the country to open a box on national television.
Yeah, that was a good show, though. Great show. Yeah, you know.
Popular.
Did you have a cup of tea with Edmonds, or was it just a quick hello and then he disappears off again?
He was nice enough. He signed a photograph for me.
Oh, that's nice.
I was a big fan of Swap Shop back in the day.
Good lad.
His dresser asked me when I bought my shirts because she was going to buy a similar shirt for Noel.
Do you reckon she got them?
You like my shirts?
The way you said that at the end, because she liked my shirts.
I think Noel liked them and said, you know, find out where I might get your shirts from.
That Noel Edmonds, he's got some fucking lovely clothes.
He's got some fucking boss threads though, John.
He fucking looks amazing on the television. You look at him and he's just so special.
He's dead smart up close as well, you know. He didn't even push it about 70, John. The man looked about 40 years of age. He's a fucking freak of nature.
He's a wonderful looking man though, you know. The idea that he's invented a machine that'll stop you getting cancer as well. It's genius. He's just a fucking genius, you know what I mean? And I fucking love his
hair. Fake beards and all, you know what I mean?
The fake beard's dead boss, isn't it? The idea of having, you know, not...
Weird pointy shoes, like dead pointy cowboy boots was his thing. Dead pointy cowboy boots and skinny jeans, like...
Fucking hell. We met him in real life at the service stations just outside the Whittle. My God, what a man. He's small in stature, but he's grand. He's grand in the way he carries himself, you know.
He's got a certain je ne sais quoi, hasn't he, John?
Oh, you know, he carries a certain joie de vivre about him as well.
He lights up a fucking room, John. You've seen Noel Edmonds for the first time. You can barely believe yourself, you know what I mean? Like an aura, John, isn't he? You know, I turned to full Manchester now, John. I meant to stay in Liverpool, but I can't do accents for more than about... I'd say about three sentences. And in a minute, John, I'll be turning back to Scottish because that's the one I sort of default to for a while, talking about Noel Edmonds in like a Fife Robertson style, John.
Yeah, but it's good though, isn't it? Just keep it like that.
Yeah, like I said, it starts off with it, John. Don't get me wrong. Like, I start doing Liverpool now, like. But, you know, after a couple of minutes, it'll start turning into sort of like a Manchester type of thing. I don't really know why it does that. But then, you know, I start, you know, like I come from fucking Manchester. And then suddenly from Manchester, I don't know quite how it happens, like, but I end up talking like Fife Robertson again, John. It's quite strange, John. And the whole timbre of my voice changes.
You know, Mike.
Basically, John, I can stay talking like Fife Robertson for 4 or 5 days. But any sort of accent, John, I fail within 30 or 40 seconds.
Well, I reckon, Mike, we've got about 8 minutes left. And if we both maintain these accents until the end, you know, that's not
about
it.
I'm going to go for it, John. I can see what happens. But there's no promises, like, you know what I mean? I start saying things like, you know what I mean? Because I think that's what Liverpool people say.
Well, it's
all
a
the
sound,
time.
Isn't it, that they make? It's a sound that they make. I mean, you know, Mike.
You're dead butter accents, though, mate. I mean, you could be from Liverpool, either way it's arguing. Like,
well, I practice it a lot. You know, in the mirror when I'm combing the pubes.
Oh, yeah. I'm lazy.
I know, but it's worth practicing. Even in the car, you know, just give it 5 minutes of talking to yourself. It keeps you going, doesn't it? It gives you that sense of, you know, there's a reason to live, isn't there? If you can do a voice, you're all right. You're okay. Yeah. You know.
Gotta get up. Grab the world by the throat and shout.
Fucking buy it.
Gotta get up. Find me a share. Make a bread out of nothing but air.
Catching the penny, but missing the pound.
Put your money in the chicken, or whatever it was.
Put your money in the fucking chicken.
Get your fucking money in the chicken.
Hey, kid, do you remember that? Watching fucking... We used to watch Breads.
What was your dad called? He was a right lazy bastard. Wasn't
Joey Boswell's dad was a fucking cunt. But I'll tell you what.
We fucking knew their family growing up, and I know for a fact the whole thing was real. We grew up next to the fucking real Boswells. I'm not fucking kidding you. Fucking Joey Boswell was a fucking supreme cunt.
Did he actually change his complete appearance after about 4 years of knowing him?
He's physically changed. He physically changed overnight. How can you do that? You know, even if you're the fucking, you know, you're the top fucking brass, you're the top fucking brass in Liverpool and everybody knows you. How the fuck do you physically change your appearance overnight?
Don't tell him, Pike.
The only thing that was the same about him was his fucking leather jacket. Even his fucking
boss leather jacket, that black leather jacket Johnny used to wear.
That's fucking
sometimes you pair it with a pair of black leather trousers. I remember thinking to myself, you look fucking dead, boss. I was about 15. I want you to look like Joey Boswell, mate, but not the one who was ugly, the first one.
The first, the good-looking one. That's what I wanted to be. Me mate, Chris Petruccio.
I ended up looking like the other fella. Who's the fat one who drives the van?
Oh, it was, I fucking know the one you mean. Fucking... Oh.
Lovely, friendly face, but, you know, obviously it was, you know, he was more into eating than anything else.
Fucking,
I liked him, though. I looked like him, though.
He was called Fat Boswell.
Last me these days, I'm Fat Boswell.
They put a leather jacket on, and he ends up looking more like Fat Boswell than fucking Joey Boswell.
I was going to have a perm, you know, back in the day, but I ended up looking like the other one. Who was the skinny one, John, who had the perm?
That was fucking undernourished Boswell. It was fucking...
Oh, yeah, skinny Boswell.
Yeah, skinny Boswell.
There was skinny Boswell, Fat Boswell, and Fit Boswell.
Yeah, and fucking...
Then there was fucking Mummy Boswell and Daddy Boswell.
And
Chicken
fucking...
Boswell. Chicken Boswell lived on the table and was fucking fed with fivers and tenners.
It's fucking...
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. It was fucking great.
Put your money in the pot.
Oh, fucking brilliant.
Old Gene Boat. Hey.
Fucking Gene Boat. Gene Boat. There's a fucking name you don't
what
hear.
What a girl she was, mate.
Fucking sounds. Fucking sounds.
Actually started life as a boat on the River Mersey.
Fucking
that's what she got the name, yeah, yeah.
Did very well.
Jerry Marsden used to fucking jump on her and take a trip across the Mersey on her twice a day, like.
She did very well for herself, that woman. She did very well for herself, you know. And I know, started off as a tugboat, ended up fucking, you know, making fucking millions on the fucking...
Liverpool can be quite a boring place on Thursday afternoon.
Can you recite the B-side to the Boy George record that does the interview?
I think you mean the Frankie Goes Hollywood. One.
Sorry, yes, you're completely right. Yeah, Frankie Goes Hollywood.
Thank you, John.
Mm. Okay. Shall I do the do 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 Now sit back and relax on ITV as Mike Bubbins takes us on a journey down memory lane as he recites the B-side to that Frankie Goes to Hollywood record.
My name is Nash, and I'm a red usual. My name's Mark. I like some people and I hate some people. My name's Peds and I wear kecks. Maybe look like I got a big packet. Bum, 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 bum.
I mean, we could just literally make a humming noise now. We could do anything. You know, the world is...
People love me. It was me whistling into a bottle before, but I haven't got one. But
what have you got to hand?
Well, I just... I was a bit hungry this morning, but I was in a rush.
Yeah.
So I grabbed a pot noodle, original curry flavour.
Brilliant.
I've eaten it now, unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah. I have, next to my microphone, the empty pot.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Shall I whistle into a pot noodle, empty pot noodle pot for like 2 minutes?
Okay. So shall I introduce it?
Oh, yes, please, John, if you would.
Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Now on ITV, sit back and relax as Mike Bubbins takes us on a trip down memory lane as he whistles the theme tune from the World of War into a pot noodle cup. Okay.
The measure line had been breached. Oh yeah, just do like one thing from Renee's.
Renee, every time you force me to listen to this podcast, I just want to die. Renee, you are a Now, fuck of a man.
Now, very quick, step to it, son, please.
Here, Albert. Albert, give us 5 minutes, will you? I need to clean myself up.
What are you talking about? I've been there for 5 minutes. What are you doing here?
I've had a bit of a problem, Albert. My lower colon's come out the bottom of my ass.
Lovely. Now, if you just do a very quick crystal walking.
So, this boy, this man, it's ended. It's ended. It's ended. It's stopped. It's stopped on that. Oh.
Oh, there we go.
That's perfect. Perfect, Mike. I'll just press stop there.
Everyone's happy.
Oh, dear.
The Demon Seed.
Broadcast, you must be mistaken.
It's now, it's here.
The man down here in help of it.
Demon Seed.
Paranormal existence.
You mean to say you came here purposely?
The first move in the great conspiracy had been made.